Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Fame, Chris Carter. A couple of last-minute note-taking. He's doing that.
My wife is watching. I know you're watching. I'm watching. I'm watching you. You watching me? I'm watching you. Yeah. Let's go.
Everybody.
Oh.
Sue, you think that teddy bear he got you over the weekend is a teddy bear? He got a camera in it, live streams to his phone at all times. Just
good,
so you
Sue.
Know.
Be real good. Big show for you today. Kobe Bryant says the Lakers will soon be laughing at the Warriors.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Tom Brady knows what he needs to do to win another Super Bowl, but why not start with a little MNF? Monday Night Football on a Tuesday morning. Eagles hosting Washington. Eagles owning Washington, thanks in large part to their quarterback, Carson Wentz. Wentz threw for 306 yards and 2 touchdowns. While it was more of the same for Washington, already injury-riddled, quarterback Colt McCoy left the game after breaking his leg. He was replaced by Mark Sanchez. McCoy is done for the year. Philly wins 28-13. They're now 6-6 with 4 more games left. Here's Carson Wentz on last night's win.
I mean, it's big for us, especially where we were, not winning 2 straight and trying to kind of get some momentum going. Doing it against an NFC East opponent was huge, and now kind of setting ourselves up to make a run, you know, to try and do something special here. And I think we're again, we're leaving some plays out there, but we're finally starting to click a little bit and mesh together. And, you know, we're extremely excited for next week's opportunity for sure.
All right, CeCe, you look at this Eagles team last night and where they've come in the last couple of weeks. Are they capable of making a run at this point? Do we still have confidence they can do that?
The only reason why we think that we're posing the question that way is because they made that run last year and they're world champs. If there are any of the other teams with the same record, I doubt that we're having a segment like this. So we've kind of extended some faith or trust because of what they've done in a recent history of respect being the world champ. But no, I mean, they're only a shell of themselves. Defensively, not as good up front as we thought they would be. I mean, last year they were amazing from a front seven and their offensive line. So just those two units are not nearly as good as they were last year. And ultimately, their secondary would hold them back from being contenders. They can't guard anybody. I mean, there is no group of wide receivers that you can put against them and feel like they would be comfortable guarding them. So not only they're big people, which last year gave them a huge advantage, was one of the reasons why I had enough faith in them, even though they had their backup playing with them in Nick Foles. Their inability to be able to get off the field on third down, create turnovers, I don't think that this team is good enough to be able to advance and put it together for 3 out of 4 weeks. No, they haven't showed that type of consistency, so I don't think they can make a run.
If you have any legitimate passing attack, you can beat the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not saying you definitely will beat, but you can beat. What they were up against last night was a team that somehow early in the game downgraded from Colt McCoy, which is tough to do in professional football, but they went to a guy in Mark Sanchez who hadn't completed a pass in 2 years and after his opening drive looked like a guy who might wait another couple of years before he completes another pass.
And next weekend, Daniel Snyder and the Brain Trust there, they're interviewing all gym teachers. If you teach gym class, you can play quarterback for them because we know
We know who can't play quarterback for him. And
absolutely.
So we just know everyone else can.
Based on contributions and everything, support.
And so So here's the situation for Philadelphia. I've always been told that football teams, most notably football coaches, like to, if they can, break the season down into quarters. I know Coach Mangini will say it's just one game after another, but you look at the season in quarters. The Philadelphia Eagles in the first quarter of the season were 2-2. In the second quarter of the season, were 2-2. We just finished the third quarter of the season.
Yep.
They were 2-2. This is an average football team. And what they have working against them is the one place they haven't been average, they've been at least slightly above average, is at home. They only got one home game left. The rest of the way, at Dallas, at the Rams, home for the Texans, at Washington. Now, I can't credibly say this team's going to all of a sudden, after going 2-2 in every quarter, go 3-4 in the final quarter when they're going to be touchdown underdogs to Dallas or 5-point underdogs to Dallas, bigger than touchdown underdogs to the Rams. Their one home game is against the hottest team in the NFL, the Houston Texans. Carson Wentz is still there, and he is playing at the exact level he played at last year, which in a separate discussion shows you how much the league has changed in just 1 year. That level last year, league MVP, that level this year, he's playing pretty well. But aside from that, they don't look like the same team at all. I did like what they got from Golden Tate yesterday. You saw him a month into the team coming into the fold. Took about a month.
That's about the time. Now, as we start to see these trades, it takes, especially for a skilled guy, wide receiver, to get acclimated.
But the only thing I'll disagree with Chris on, the only other reason they're in this discussion is not just because they're defending champs, but because there is still, even with what they did Thursday night, questions about Dallas. And when Dallas is the only team ahead of them, the Giants are done, and Washington is going to be starting Mark Sanchez or who knows, Cody Kessler's on a team right now. Nate Peterman available, maybe he'll come in. Washington's finished as well. That's the other reason. We're like, well, Philly could theoretically win the division, have a home game, but I think they top out at 8 wins. I don't think 8 wins gets it done.
So that's it. I think the conversation is more what can they do in the division and not how far can they go. But weren't we in not the same, but a very similar boat last year? They had a shaky secondary. They had a quarterback who had left. I mean, I feel like we gave up on them last year, and then they made this run. I don't want to say we're giving up on them this year, but we don't have nearly as much faith, even though we saw they
did
something
great last year, which was rush the passer.
Oh, well, last year, I think they had 10 wins.
By the time their quarterback comes.
Yeah, so, hey, you got 10 wins. You got some room to be able to. No, at 6 wins, you are what your record is. My friend, Hall of Famer Bill Parcells, they're 6-6. It's not as if we're baking anything into it, taking anything away from it. They're not a very good. Listen, it wasn't like it was a guarantee they was going to win this game. If you can't beat Colt McCoy, a Colt McCoy-Sanchez combination, how good of a team are you? I mean, two guys that were out of football a couple months ago. So, no, this Philadelphia Eagle team, it's not, and this is not 2017.
And Adrian Peterson had an odd stat line yesterday. Nine carries for 98 yards with included in that a 90-yard touchdown. So we can do that math. That means he had 8 yards on his other 8 carries. But that 90-yard touchdown, when you know they're running the football, they're up against the goal line, right? See, you have Mark Sanchez as your quarterback. The game is
in the balance. No, he just came in the game. It was his first play.
Right. So you know they're not going to say, hey, Mark.
It's 35 degrees.
Right. Drop back into your own end zone, your first game action in 2 years. You know they're running the football.
Literally. Right up the middle.
And it was one good cut. I'll give Peterson credit. But how does that happen? That doesn't happen to a good team. That didn't happen, and that's where, if your secondary's bad enough, that's where it can also cost you in the running game. Like, I like Malcolm Jenkins. I like he's their only remaining member of their secondary, but their linebackers and their back end of the defense, that should never happen in the NFL. A 90-yard run from the 10-yard line, Sanchez first play of the game, I don't know what you expected them to do there.
See, who do you think Dallas was rooting for last night?
I think they were probably rooting for Washington.
Yes. To get rid of Philly because of Washington's quarterback situation.
Yes.
All right, let's take a break. Still ahead, can Aaron Rodgers handle all the pressure now that Mike McCarthy is gone? That's next. This is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Kareem Hunt is now a free agent after clearing waivers following his release by Kansas City on Friday. The Chiefs released Hunt after video confirmed Hunt's version of the altercation in which he shoved and kicked a woman was not truthful. Hunt is currently not allowed to play as it remains on the commissioner's exempt list. See, let's start the conversation with you. What does the future now hold for Kareem Hunt? Not Kareem Hunt the football player, but Kareem Hunt the man now.
Well, I hope that he's in the process of getting some type of counseling. I don't think this is the first incident where he has been involved, where he has displayed that type of anger or violence towards another person. I guarantee you, if you do some research, I guarantee when they start looking back on it, he's going to have a couple episodes. Typically, to me, this is never like the first time.
Well, it was reported late last night in Mosaic, a nightclub in Kansas City, place I'm familiar with, that in January he's alleged to have, against a man, getting a bar fight against a man where he kicked a guy similarly to what we saw in the video. Now, we obviously feel very differently, as I think we should, about men fighting other men, bar fight type of situation, than what we saw in that video. But to your point, like, yes, that's already started to come out, that there are these flashes of rage.
Right. What I'm really concerned about is because I don't know what his future is, because the NFL, and they don't have a plan. Typically in these instances, and what we've learned through domestic violence, like, we've all been educated. But what have we learned to be able to help the players? Like, what have we learned since the initial video of Ray Rice? Like, what have we learned, Adrian Peterson? What have we learned? Like, we haven't learned or changed a whole bunch. So for me, being in the NFL locker room and covering this sport for, man, almost the last 35 years, and I know I have to personally admit, not only my upbringing made me more apt for violence, but playing in this league made me a violent person. To be effective in the NFL, you have to go through a metamorphosis. You have to change the person you are to be able to play this game effectively. Like, you turn into a different person on game day than the person who walks the street. Now, for me, in the 1,700 players, we should know that as the NFL. We should know our product. We should know our locker rooms. We should know and not be so reactionary and be more proactive. The NFL needs to partner with all the colleges, NCAA, 122 of them, and come up with some type of program where we're helping people who play football. Because I believe that the game of football, a violent sport, we all admit that. But wouldn't you admit to be good at it, you'd have to be a violent person unless you were a kicker, a quarterback, or someone else? How can you not be either I can thrive in violence, or I can survive around violence, or I'm a violent person and not be successful in the league? I think that's the part that we are missing. I hear commentators talking about, you think a team will grab Kareem Hunt? That to me really don't matter, because we just don't have a system to be able to help guys out. If we know as a league, we got a great, great history. But if we want this history to be enhanced, we need to be able to help these men get the type of help that they would need. Just like substance abuse, we're proactive. In colleges, there's a substance abuse program that bleeds them into our program of substance abuse into the league. There is no violent program in college. There is not the overall awareness that we need to be making these, because that's the kind of the farm system for getting these guys to the NFL. So I just believe from Park Avenue on down, we just, the Players Association, we need to realize who's in our locker room and realize we are not helping them. So to me, it's not about did he get claim, who's going to give him a chance next. We don't have a program to really be able to help guys and to be able to get them to understand and to potentially, if they're going to work, because I do believe that it's hard to have a zero tolerance policy. I don't see a lot of other jobs that have zero tolerance policies.
And I personally, I don't think zero tolerance policies work in almost any walk of life. And I also think that we have to, and it's a dangerous conversation to have, and it's a tough one to have, but we also have to analyze each of these instances individually and recognize that what Reuben Foster was accused of is not what Kareem Hunt was accused of, is not what...
But we put them all in the same bucket.
Which, to me, minimizes some and exacerbates others. And by that, here's what I mean. You tell me if you think I'm off base here. Reuben Foster, let's just take the accusations at face value. The way I view it, there is a difference between repeated abuse of your partner, which is what he's accused of three separate times in the last 6 months, of beating on the same woman. And someone showing, whether it was Joe Mixon at the pizza parlor, showing a flash moment of rage, or whether it was Kareem Hunt in the hotel showing a flash moment of rage, none of them are acceptable. And I view the violence against women as particularly egregious because we're talking about pro football players who obviously have an enormous physical advantage over me, much less over the average woman on the street. And so, but if we lump them all into the same category, you're not going to get the help. Reuben Foster needs a different type of help than Kareem Hunt needs.
But we don't have help right now for any of them. So to be able to discern between the severity of their crimes and have to somehow make different punishments or different policies based on what they did would be near impossible at this point if we can't all come together or the NFL can't come.
They are getting help. They are provided counseling, all those things. So saying they're not getting help, that's not true. What I want to do is be more proactive. I don't want to meet Reuben Foster on these terms. I don't want to meet Kareem Hunt on these terms. I want to come up with some type of program that I can prevent the next Reuben Foster,
so like
that I can prevent
about,
the next Kareem Hunt. We can be more proactive and realize people in football are more apt for violence. We get all the financial training. When you come into the league, oh, man, they have everyone. Merrill Lynch, they have all these people laid out. Man, we're going to take care of your finances. We have seen guys who have thrown away their money. Oh, you need to make this more of a priority. Because our overall conduct and our overall app to be violent in public is more, that's more important than can you save your money?
At this point, what is the NFL supposed to do? Is the NFL supposed to be a rehab facility? Is it supposed to be a policing facility? Is it supposed to be a one and done? I mean, what are they realistically, what can they do?
So this is why.
Well, this is what we're not going to do. We ain't going to put these expectations that are above the court, above police officers. That's one thing we shouldn't. I believe we're making a mistake. Like, we act like the NFL. Listen, you guys are the Supreme Court. You guys should handle this in the utmost way. Well, really? Well, and the police are handling it a different way.
Well, that's that's the bigger conversation. That is, we have in this video that young lady begging the police look at the video. Look at the video. And what happened? The police in that instance, I don't know about subpoenas, and I recognize I'm out a little over my skis here about what they are allowed to look at and what they're not. But we societally, we know we don't have a grasp on violence against women. We know we don't. And that to me has been one of the NFL's, I think it was well-intentioned, but one of their biggest missteps was the idea that they positioned themselves to be, we're going to not solve it, but we're going to be a fair arbiter on this when nobody has figured it out. How many instances do we hear, tragic instances of a man who has been repeatedly arrested, detained, accused of violence, and it ends with him walking out the jail and eventually doing something even
and
more
this
horrible.
Is not, this is not a Roger Goodell problem. It all gets pointed to the league office. But people don't realize Roger works for the 32 owners, typically doing what they want to do. We need the owners to be more proactive in saying they want to have something in place. We need the Players Association to be more proactive. NFL players are more apt for violence. How do I know that? I'm not guessing. Because I was one. I've been covering the game enough. And we're no different than the day Ray Rice when we saw that video. We don't have a plan of action what to do to help these guys. Yes, they're getting some type of counseling, but how we could have gotten out ahead of that. We could actually have something in place by now.
But it's important to clarify, you're not saying this happened because he didn't get counseling or because there was no system in place in the NFL.
I hope no one listening to me thought that I was saying that.
Okay, I just want to say it still falls on the person at fault here for starting that in the first place. We're talking about in the future.
No, I'm just trying to tell you what's more important. But it's not the individual right now. All right? We're sitting around talking about, hey, man, what about Kareem Hunt's career? I don't care about his career. I care about the human beings that are misrepresenting guys that have played this. And we need some help. All right? We need to get them help. That's what's more important than him toting the ball, catching the ball.
And if there's to Chris's point, if there's a system in place before you get to the league where they're like, hey, we know NFL guys, a lot of them come from backgrounds where there's not a lot of money. And so before you blow your money, we're going to give you the tools not to do it. If they are acknowledging that what Chris is saying is true, is a lot of guys are from rough backgrounds, sure, with surrounded by violence, and then you're playing a game that
compounded
is inherently violent.
Yeah.
Before we have that, but teach you how to when you have been taught on the football field to channel your rage one way, that once you get off the field to channel it a different way. And also, one thing I would implore those 32 owners is to have your own group discussion about how much you actually do care about the victims of domestic violence that we can't see. How much we actually do care about the ones that aren't caught on video but are credible accusers.
Sure.
And look at the reaction to Reuben Foster, who was accused of repeated behavior against, theoretically, someone who trusted and loved him, as opposed to someone who was caught on video in an instant. Neither is acceptable under any circumstances, but there is clearly a different reaction to when the Chiefs, I know Kareem lied to them, but they knew he was accused of something. There wasn't video initially, and he was out there running for on pace for 1,200 yards this year. Video came out. Now, wash their hands of him entirely. That dichotomy is bothersome.
I guarantee you, after that meeting where he didn't tell them the truth, was the follow-up? Did he go to a meeting? Was he appointed a counselor? Was he given? No. No, he wasn't. So then, eventually, the video comes out, and now everyone's trying to spend, oh, we need to be able to help him out when there was a problem that they realized before.
All right, we're going to take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Welcome back to the show. Mark Schlereth joins us. Hosting.
Hello, how are you guys?
We are good. We missed you. It's great to have you.
We're a week together.
I know. It's going to be good.
We're doing a few shows. Then we're calling a game this weekend together.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Carolina at Cleveland.
That I was going to say. Tell the fine folks.
Dick
Carolina
Stockton,
at Cleveland. Very nice.
Leading the telecast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man, looking forward to it.
You talk line of scrimmage, like that's what you said.
Okay,
right?
Yes, I'm handling the interior.
I'm talking about coverage and wide receivers.
Perfect. Yeah, so the roles have been.
We're gonna flip it up. We're gonna reverse it.
In all seriousness, I had never heard you call games at the NFL level until last year, and I reached out to you and told you I thought you were awesome.
Well, thank you.
Showing stuff that I hadn't seen before. See, you've done two this year already, but I feel like I've heard you call 15 games sitting with you watching football. I can't wait to see you guys together. It should be awesome this weekend.
It's gonna be fun.
Two of the best quarterbacks in the league, Baker and Cam, playing. So I'm excited to see that, too.
All right, speaking of good quarterbacks, it is the day after the day that the Green Bay Packers fired head coach Mike McCarthy. The Super Bowl-winning coach was let go after losing to the Arizona Cardinals at home on Sunday. They now fall to 4-7-1 on the year. Packers say Aaron Rodgers will not be a part of the search for the next head coach. They also say Rodgers wasn't responsible for McCarthy getting fired in the first place. Rodgers addressed the move on Monday.
As much as, you know, was made, conjectured about him and I's relationship, you know, it was always built on mutual respect and communication. And that's why this is a different day for myself and the guys in the locker room. I think him and I, like any relationship, we have our amazing times. We have our times where we butt heads. But the basis, like I said, was built on mutual respect and communication. And, we spent a lot of time here talking off the field at my house or his house, spending time together and growing in our friendship. And we accomplished a lot together. I mean, I'm old, so I'm older. I'm not involved. You know, I'm not excited about a rebuild, but I don't think that's the direction we're going. I think we have a lot of pieces in place. We just got to make them fit perfectly and start to play better in all phases. I think Brian's committed to winning now, and Mark is committed to winning now. And you've seen it other places. They've been able to turn things around in a year. I mean, obviously Philly, a couple years to win a championship, and what LA's been doing. I mean, it's definitely doable in this day and age. You just got to bring the pieces together and get guys gelling on the same page.
All right, so let's spin this forward. How much pressure does Mike McCarthy's firing now, Stink, place on the shoulders of Aaron Rodgers?
Well, I think it plays, I mean, plenty, but Aaron Rodgers has played with that kind of pressure on his shoulders. I mean, he has been the guy that has been required to play, above the X's and O's. And when he does that, and he has done that on a consistent basis throughout his career, he's one of, if not the best quarterback in football. So he's always going to have a ton of weight on his shoulders. The bottom line is he is right in this. You have got to be able to get your guys in the best out of the guys that you have on your roster. And when you look at the Green Bay Packers, you know, from a talent standpoint, over the years, they've had enough talent to be competitive, enough talent to win championships, enough talent to go deep into the playoffs, and they haven't, for whatever reason, been able to do that in many people's eyes enough times because of the quarterback they have. So it squarely falls on his shoulders. He's got to be great. But, I mean, that's every quarterback that's great in this league. I mean, it falls on Brady's shoulders. It falls on,
Drew Brees,
all those guys. It falls on their shoulders. Don't forget, Drew Brees, without the pieces around him, went 7-9, 7-9, and 7-9. Three straight years until last year they went back to the playoffs. So you've got to have complete football teams. You want to win championships, your teams have to be complete. And oftentimes the problem that you get into with a Green Bay Packers and an Aaron Rodgers is that they hide so many warts that you look at yourself as an organization and you think you're better than you really are across the board because that guy covers so many things. And that's something they have to really look hard and long at themselves of have we put the pieces in place and what is the system that we have to give our guys the best opportunity to win?
Yes, I said it yesterday that Aaron Rodgers will be under more pressure than any other point in his career. And the reason why, because those in the know, they know Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy were not on the same page. Aaron Rodgers is moving on. So if they fired Mike McCarthy during the season, it was on the board at the beginning of the season that he could get fired. We all agree to that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay. So in doing that, it's on the board. Mark Murphy, it's on the board. We might fire the coach. but we're getting ready to make the quarterback the highest paid. Now, that's an interesting exchange right there because Aaron didn't have to have a new contract. Aaron could have played out this year. He still got room on this contract. They could have done it. Like, I wish it was that way. But now when they're making Aaron the highest paid player, there's a certain amount of pressure that goes with that. Those people in the football business know Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy were not seeing eye to eye. So Mike McCarthy's the guy blaming. You talked about Drew Brees when they went 7-9, 7-9, 7-7, 7-9. They didn't blame Sean Payton. They was like, oh, man, the coaches, the defense, the special teams. All right. So they made some adjustments, brought in Dennis Allen, brought in Mike Westhoff as a special teams coordinator. But in Green Bay, it all went on McCarthy. Now, the general manager last year lost his job. So the trickle-down effect is not only from a talent standpoint, they are refacing this organization with Aaron Rodgers being there. Now, Aaron Rodgers, to me, there are people who think that Aaron should be a part of them selecting the head coach. I wouldn't do that. I think that's a critical error because I don't think he has the skill nor the temperament to be able to pick a head coach, nor do I. When they fired Dennis Green after all the success he had, the owners came to me, Chris, who do you think should be the next coach? Ain't none of my business. I ain't got nothing to do with it. I don't even know how to select it. But I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to give you one tip. I can guarantee you the coach you select will not be better than Dennis Green. That was my advice to him, and let them proceed because I know I'm not capable of selecting the right guy with the right temperament to move forward. As much football as I know, and I would love to be able to have that skill set, but I haven't been trained. I haven't been trained to be able to do that. I know a good coach when I see him. When I see him coaching a team, but I don't know him sitting in a room if he gets on the board and everything to know that he is the guy that can lead 53 grown men. And an interview process won't prove that out. A 15-minute meeting will not prove that out.
But when you were playing, did you know guys in the league that you said you knew some guys that you played against who could coach? Did you also know some guys in the league that you thought couldn't coach? Some guys when you were up against them, whether a coordinator or whatever it was.
Of course.
Okay. So what I wonder as far as Aaron Rodgers' involvement in the coaching search is to mix metaphors to a degree. Our guy Brian, our guest booker Brian, will give us a list of names at times. Hey, guys, here are people I think we might be able to get on the show. Is there anyone you don't want? And we strike through that. And they're like, no. This person works. Not this guy. I wouldn't let Aaron Rodgers pick my head coach. I wouldn't ask Aaron Rodgers for a list of head coaches. What I think I would do is, if I have a list of seven guys I'm going to bring in to interview, I would ask him, is there any name on this list you think you couldn't work with and why? Is there anyone on here you want to veto? I think veto power is different than asking for a recommendation.
What has he done to deserve veto power? I've never even heard that by an NFL player. So we've been playing this game 99 years, and we're getting ready to give one player, Aaron Rodgers, I guess because he can throw. Because at no point, not in high school, not in junior college, not at Cal, not in Green Bay, as I said, man, this guy right here is John Wayne. This guy can lead us through anything. I haven't heard anyone say that. So maybe you've detected some skill that I have not seen that I even trust him to sit down with these seven people.
Most of the relationships are very much like the relationship Aaron Rodgers described he had with Mike McCarthy. You think Brady and Belichick get along all the time? You think it's always warm and fuzzy?
Okay, no. New England's going to go to a new coach. Kraft, you think he's going to let Brady select? And if he does, do you think, let's just say he could select any coach midway through his career. Do you think he would have selected Belichick?
Heck no.
Thank you.
Right.
The thing you need is not the thing that you're going to select.
Right. I've seen Mike Shanahan and John Elway in Super Bowl years butt heads constantly.
Yes.
This is part of the process that goes through. The best, my offensive line coach in Denver, Alex Gibbs, I love him to death. There are two types of people that played for Alex Gibbs. He's either the greatest coach you've ever played for or he's the worst coach you've ever played for. There is no in between. But he was a vitriolic, in your face. That's the way he coached. And sometimes, you know what? Sometimes that's a great thing. Sometimes just the hatred motivation is what you need. But it's never one of those things like, let me just pick out somebody who's warm and fuzzy that I get along
but
with.
But I don't think, I wasn't trying to act as if that's what Aaron Rodgers would or should do. But if we, assuming that, and I don't know if this is the case, but it seems the trend of the NFL is going where the guys who are getting head coaching jobs are offensive-minded coaches instead of defensive-minded coaches. Assuming that the Packers are going to go with an offensive-minded coach, whether it's a former head coach or an offensive coordinator, whomever, I would, whether warm and fuzzy is not the issue. I would want to know, when Chris has talked about extensively that Aaron Rodgers throughout his career has had relationship problems, is do you think this is someone you can have a working relationship with? Is there something, much like, I don't know why the, I'm not sure what the Vikings, the exact reason they came to you when they fired Dennis Green was, but you were the best player on the team and they thought there was a reason to at least see if you wanted input. Now you said no. I'm not equipped for it. And maybe Rodgers would do the same. But I would imagine it also made you...
No, Aaron thinks he should. Because remember his comments about the coach. Remember his comments about the other players. Aaron thinks he should be involved.
His comments it's about not the quarterback coach?
Yes. Was so, it? No, it's not like
right, They fired coaches last offseason. They fired several coaches. Mm-hmm.
And he thought that he should have been a part of that process. So he's not like me.
Well, sure, fair enough. But my point is the Vikings went to – Vikings, not knowing what your reaction was going to be, came to you and saw if you wanted to have some input. And even though you turned it down, I'm guessing – maybe I'm wrong – I'm guessing that further validated for you where you were. That they have enough respect for me that they are at least opening this door to me.
No, it let me know the Vikings didn't know what the hell they were doing. That's what it let me know. They did not know what they were doing. Guess who they hired?
Mike Tice.
Mike Tice.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, you talking about that's a long. I got a lot of respect for Mike Tice. He's one of my dogs. But him and Dennis Green, let's stop this. All right? So that's what the Vikings did. Yeah, that was my example.
Would you have vetoed that? If you saw his name on a list.
No, because I know better, man.
Okay.
I'm in the locker room with them other dudes. I am not, man, they already thought I was a company man. Do you let alone, man, if I was involved in a coaching decision, you know how they'll treat me in the locker room? Like, man, that's a death trap. If the players in the Green Bay's locker room find out that Aaron Rodgers is a part of who they select as a coach, they are not going to respect Aaron Rodgers. Because let me tell you something. Aaron was a different guy with McCarthy because when he was talking behind his back and everything, now what's he going to say about this guy he selected? Oh, that's a death trap. Aaron, don't do it. Don't be involved in it. Don't listen to these people.
You know, he vetoed you the first time around.
That's not true.
Then I got hired.
No,
nope.
It's up to them. You know. They feel like he's the right guy. I can work with him. I can work with anybody. All right? You signing the checks. Let's do this. All right? Make y'all into stars.
Stink.
And if y'all
around.
Not, it's their fault. Not mine. I did select Stink.
That is 100%.
That's my guy.
That's
everything
right.
Jenna
Cam
said
Newton
was a lie.
The Panthers
that
turned their season around. That's next on First Things First. Of course it was a lie.
Jenna,
of course it was a lie.
Stink. I was like the chili sauce guy?
Yeah.
What are you saying? He's a food magnate.
The other guys,
nope.
Stink, yes. Mangini, yes. The rest of them, y'all keep them.
College football now. The Heisman finalists were announced last night. Kyler Murray, Tua Tagovailoa, and Dwayne Haskins will all come to New York for the Heisman ceremony right down the street here. Some online sports books now have Kyler Murray as the favorite to win the
How
award.
How about that?
Stink, who would get your vote for the Heisman?
Probably Tua. I'd probably go Tua. Played against better defenses throughout his, you know, throughout this year. Never played in the fourth quarter, so his numbers may suffer a little bit. But I think he played five top 10 defenses where Murray only played in one top 10 defense.
I love the top 10 defenses, Stink. Great stat there.
Here is what this is a lesson, though. We always try to give the Heisman away after six games. And every year, whomever they have it wrapped up after six games, that's not how
it turns out. The Buckeyes, we could use another Heisman, though. We got room. I mean, we got Heisman.
It's the only way you get your number retired, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Winning the Heisman.
Yeah, you ain't getting your number retired. No other circumstances.
Finally, Panthers made some changes to their defensive staff, firing multiple assistants. Carolina's lost four in a row. They're now 6-6 on the year. Stink, can the Panthers still make a playoff push?
They just have not been consistent enough anywhere. I mean, obviously, they've run the ball well, and Christian McCaffrey's been unbelievable, catching the ball and running the ball as well. Defensively, they just haven't had consistency at all three levels. They'll play a great game up front, but the back end will let them down. I just don't look at them as a team that I think can push through this and get themselves in a playoff berth.
Right. Unfortunate for Eric Washington. He's a defensive coordinator there. They were moving the duties from him. Now, Ron Rivera, he's one of the most trusted assistants as far as grooming young defensive coordinators. So I do trust Ron Rivera that he's going to be able to help out, to be able to shore up some of the problems they're having. Their biggest problems have to be, it's not their linebacking core, having to be with their front and how they were playing. They went to like a different scheme. I don't know the reason why, but if you look at the last 3 years, they've lost their defensive coordinator. Sean McDermott goes off to Buffalo. Last year, they lost Steve Wilkes. He went to Arizona. So now 3 years, they've been one of the few teams was able to create continuity. Ron Rivera's more hands-on. I like that because he's a defensive coach. That's how he's cut his teeth. And I believe that him mentoring Eric along the way will help them.
And this is – I'm not glad anybody lost their job. I'm glad that we're having this discussion because it does let – America, who's maybe not paying that close attention to the Panthers, that while this last game was because Cam was terrible, this four-game slide has not been because Cam's been terrible. It's been because the defense, see, you said it yesterday. Since Ron Rivera took over, this is the second most points per game they've allowed in his entire tenure. The most were his first year as head coach back in 2011. And this year they're allowing almost 26 points a game defensively. That's never been the recipe for Carolina. It's always been what's been baked into Cam's success has been with an excellent defense. What he does running as a quarterback with an excellent defense. The time possession you can have with Cam Newton and an excellent defense. Right. This year they haven't even had an average defense. That's contributed to this four-game slide that started with that blowout loss to the Steelers.
Well, go back to the Seattle game 2 weeks ago where they lost 30-27. And you look at their defense, Seattle had rushed the ball for 150-plus yards 7 weeks in a row. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they shut them down to 2.7 per carry. They didn't have anything. They couldn't get anything. Then the front seven was tremendous. The linebacking core was tremendous. And the secondary gave up one big play after the next, after the next, after the next. And they never got a consistent pass rush on Russell Wilson. So they don't. All three levels of that defense have never at one time over the course of the season have really played great together at the same time.
I understand how it works on the offensive side of the ball, but when you have a coach now calling defensive plays, did you look at this Carolina Panther team and say, I feel like the defense could be played differently or that they could have called different plays and somehow schematically it would have affected the outcome of a game? Or how is the calling of the plays really affect so much what happens?
As Stink, and I hear what Stink's saying, it seems like Stink's probably watched a few games because that happens to be our game coming up. Right. So from a scheme standpoint, they just haven't had the continuity. All right. Their defensive front has been dominant. We know their linebacking core, like their front seven. So the reason why they go out and get someone like Eric Reed and they have Adams at safety, they got veteran safeties in the middle. Luke Kuechly still playing at a high level. People would say, well, Thomas Davis, have he lost a little step? I would say he's lost a half a step. But the lack of corner play, and you can't play the way they want to play defense and not have good front line play and good corner play, and we just haven't seen
that. And it's less to me of a concern, sorry to interrupt, it's less to me of a concern of a head coach being hands-on with the defense because there's so much less game management stuff the head coach has to do when his team doesn't have the ball as far as timeouts, clock management stuff.
Okay.
So to me, that's less of a concern.
And what you do is if you release someone like Brady Hoke, for one, you send him back to Harbaugh, send him back to Michigan because their defensive front could use a coach like that. But you move Eric Washington, have him help up the defensive front. Ron Rivera, he's linebacker. So then you start to bring those groups together, hoping you can get the type of rhythm that you've had in Carolina since Rivera's been there.
All right, let's move on now to the Kansas City Chiefs. They sit atop the AFC West at 10-2 behind Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid, and a dynamic offense. But now they move forward without leading rusher Kareem Hunt. Mahomes says the team has to keep going out there to win football games. Nick, can the Chiefs win, say, a Super Bowl without Hunt?
I think they can. I think that Kareem Hunt is a big loss for them. And if people are just tuning in, we talked about the real story with Kareem Hunt earlier. This is the on-the-field part of it. But he's not as important to them as their quarterback, obviously. He's not, to me, as important for them as Tyreek Hill is. He's not as important even as Travis Kelce is. And so I think that the level that Patrick Mahomes is playing and the fact that we have seen this is one position in the NFL where the drop-off between the very good and the good is, to me, not as significant as it is at wide receiver or tight end, certainly at quarterback, that I do think that they're not as well positioned as they were before, but this doesn't change my opinion they're the best team in the AFC. This doesn't change my opinion that if they secure the one seed, no one's going to go to Arrowhead and beat them.
But how much better is Mahomes because he had a guy like Kareem Hunt there and he had the security blanket of being able to hand off to a guy that he felt comfortable with?
I'm not going to say this is a bad question, but I'm just going to say when you get off the bus in the NFL, man, you need players, all right? You need players. So now all of a sudden, we're taking one guy off our team. So we act as if Kansas City, did we think they were that much better than the rest of the league? I know Stink and I didn't. And we believe they're going to miss Kareem Hunt. He has rare ability, breaking tackles in the hole. being able to break off a long run. Look how many yards he gets after contact. So to think Patty Mahomes, how many starts Patty got? 12?
13.
13 starts. To think that he didn't benefit from a 1,000-yard rusher, like, we'd be naive to stupid. All right? To think that Kansas City is as good today, like Nick Foles. Nick Foles, they did win the Super Bowl, but they still were not as a good football team. So I didn't think they were that much better than the rest of the NFL, and now they're losing one of their most valuable, one of their most versatile players. Yes, it's going to affect them because Spencer Ware, I love Spencer Ware. I've been watching him play since high school. Cincinnati Princeton, went down and played at LSU, was a quarterback when he first came into college, and then LSU converted him. He doesn't put the fear into the defense. He doesn't have that long ball ability. No. So when you run all these speed sweeps, run all these other things, there's less attention to Spencer because he doesn't have the ability of Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt is a special player. And I think, you know, every coordinator you talk to, you travel around and do games, every coordinator says, we want to make the team that we're playing against one-dimensional. We want to shut down the run. And I don't believe any of them. Because I think the game has changed. I think everybody wants to say, hey, we're going to play nickel. We're going to play dime. Yes. We're going to play with one linebacker. We're going to be small. And you know what? We're going to let you run it for 4 or 5 yards a carry. We're going to let you run it for 6 yards a carry. But what we're trying to do is play coverage. We're trying to take away the tight end. We're trying to take away, you know, your Tyreek Hill. We're trying to take all those guys away. And the thing about him is he's a dynamic runner. He's a powerful runner. You get in small matchups, he will run not only by you, he will run through you, and he catches the ball exceptionally well in the backfield.
And can play on a bad field and can play in the cold.
Right. Here's I'll just give you a scenario. Super Bowl 32, I was fortunate enough to play in that. Terrell Davis left with a migraine.
Yep.
When he left with a migraine for a quarter, I didn't even know he was injured. I didn't even know he was out of the game. We didn't run it for two inches. And I'm not bagging the guys we had back there, Lavelle. I'm not bagging the guys that we had back there because they were good.
You just tell me how special
Hebron.
He was.
He was just a different player. He
and
comes
Kareem
back in
Hunt.
And goes to the MVP, and we win that game. If he stays out the whole second half, we don't beat Green
but
Bay.
But he also,
game.
You would agree, Terrell at that point was the best player on your team. With respect to John Elway.
Absolutely.
Like that, and that's the question.
I think we get
– Go ahead. Go ahead, see.
No, I just think we get caught up into who's the best player. It does, you need dudes to win games.
Of course.
And the way they run their offense. Mm. Like, Andy Reid cannot call the same type of game. So I if I had Andy Reid here and I put some truth serum in him, I guarantee you he would tell us we are not nearly as good, Chris, because there's only been a few running backs in our great history that have been more productive than this guy in his first 30 starts.
Right. There's no question they're worse. Like, but the question isn't, are the Chiefs as good without Kareem Hunt as they are with him? It's not a Le'Veon Bell, James Conner.
Can they move forward and be successful?
The question
without
is, like, and
you said that they were the best team in the league still without Kareem Hunt, and I
certainly think they're the best team in the AFC still without him. And I think that if you can't overcome, like, this is a particular case because of the reason he's off the field. But we are going to see a team lose a player of similar caliber and of similar value due to injury in this next month, and we're not going to X them
off. Okay, let's do this. Let's go down. Let's go to the teams in the playoff hunt, and you take off a caliber running back, Kareem Hunt, and I'll tell you what I think about.
A caliber running back or a caliber just player on their team in general?
Well, but just think about this, okay? How many explosives can Kareem Hunt account for during the course of a game? Three explosives?
Three or four.
Right?
So could the Rams still win?
But my thing is, you automatically take three or four explosives off there. Now guess what I can do? Man, you know what we're going to do? Tyreek Hill, we're going to double team him. We're going to in and out him. We're going to up and down him, right? We're going to play man trail with somebody over the top of him the entire game. Travis Kelce, we're going to find a way to double team that guy, and we're not worried about the other four or five explosives we would certainly give up. There's no question if we try to double team those guys, we're giving up five or six explosives to Kareem Hunt. Now we don't have to worry about those explosives. Guess what? We get a win. It may be tight, but we're going to win. That's the other AFC teams talking right now.
All right, Stink, stick around. Coming up, let's talk some Eagles. Do they have a playoff run left in them? Especially after last night. That's next on First Things First. We have some breaking news to pass along to you. Urban Meyer will step down as Ohio State's head football coach after facing Washington in the Rose Bowl. Meyer will leave the program after winning at least 11 games in each of his 7 seasons and taking home the 2014 national championship. He will be replaced by offensive coordinator Ryan Day. CC, I'll start with you. You know Urban very well. What was your reaction to the news?
I knew it was either coming either yesterday or today. We've been battling this, going back and forth. Urban's a very, very close friend of mine, so I'm not surprised. I did know that this was part of what Urban was planning, and to be able to get through that final month of the season, because it's been an unbelievably tough season for Urban. And his biggest problem is he wants to coach, but physically he can't coach. He can't do this anymore.
And tell people why, what he's going
and
through.
And I think it's been well documented as far as the cyst on his brain. When he gets agitated, upset, when he gets in coaching mode.
High intensity.
It becomes very to almost impossible for him to coach because the cyst begins to leak and begins to leak fluid, which leads to not a migraine headache, but a splitting headache. When we saw him double over on the sideline, that was not because of anything else but the cyst and it rupturing. And there's a few things that potentially he could do. He could rest and the cyst doesn't go anywhere and potentially he could coach. The second one is to have a procedure done where they could relieve the pressure, a procedure he had done a couple years ago, but you're opening up the brain. And every time you do that, and that's not coming with a great deal of encouragement by the specialist who's working on him. And the third thing is what we saw today was Urban Meyer resigning as the coach at Ohio State.
All right, see, this is, and I don't want to reveal confidences, this is something we've talked about a lot off the air over the last month.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you just personally, are you relieved?
Urban and I had a very, very frank conversation.
Yeah.
And Urban was my wide receiver coach at Ohio State. And what I was afraid was happening in the last 4 weeks, and I refused to go to the Michigan game. I went to the Big Ten championship, and that's because Urban wanted me there. I thought something else was going to happen on the sideline before we were able to get to this day. So Urban Meyer, he really can't coach. He shouldn't be coaching. And I would argue that he shouldn't have been coaching the last month for what he went through. But that program and those kids and the promise he made to those kids, he tried to fulfill that. But it's tough. But I can guarantee you his wife, I met her. I've been knowing her for a long time, but I had a meeting with her on Friday night in Indianapolis because I was traveling with the team. Urban had me speaking to the team a couple of times. And I know she's relieved. I know the kids are relieved because we were worried. I was worried that I was going to have to speak at my friend's funeral. And that's not something you want to be to do. You don't want to have to think about that. And when football is taken away from you, it's not, he's not controlling it. He doesn't have really any say in this. Like, he's surrendering to his condition.
What has Urban meant to this university? You just said he was important to him to finish out the season. I mean, clearly he has such a special place in his heart for these kids, this team, the university as a whole.
Yeah, I think that when you're molding young men and you can have an impact in their life for 4 to 6 years, the way Urban's done it, and he's been very, very successful at every level, Ohio State will survive. We've been playing football 125 years. We will survive. We got great kids there. We got a good coaching staff there. Ryan Day, and Urban and I have been going over this when he took over when Urban was suspended. Urban thinks he's the best offensive coordinator he's ever had. Now, he's got 3 or 4 guys out there, Dan Mullins, Tom Herman, them. These guys are running Florida, Texas. He said Ryan Day is even better than them. And you can see the way he runs his offense. It's definitely far more creative. And you've seen him develop Dwayne Haskins in a very, very special way. So Urban Meyer means a lot to the university. He's a Buckeye born and bred. He's from Ohio. His dad, man, wanted him one day to be the potential to coach at Ohio State. His dad ended up passing on. So Urban has been able to fulfill a lot of goals in his life. Urban's a good man. And he's had a tremendous impact on young people, and I believe he can continue having an impact on young people moving forward. I don't believe he's done in that arena. I believe that part right there, his voice, it should be out there somewhere. So now I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do in retirement. I'm going to beat his brakes off. I'm going to beat the brakes off of him in golf. I know that. I already told you that.
And the reason I said I asked you if you were relieved is because I have been – outside of your office while you are, I see your phone ring, says Urban Myers, because you had an S to his name in the phone. And I've
we have some knockdown dragouts now.
Yes.
I've no heard warm and
about,
fuzzy.
About this, about Chris telling him, hey, man, you told me what your plan was, that because of your health, because of you wanting your commitment to your wife and your children, mm-hmm. that this was going to be it. And then 10 days later, him reaching out to you and saying, well, here's the thing. And you yelling at him and making it very clear what you just said. What you just said on TV, you said to him, you're going to put me in a position where I'm going to be talking at my friend's funeral, and I don't want to do that. And so I don't know Urban Meyer. I sat and interviewed him once. You've known him for 30 years?
Yeah.
30 years? I know. He's 77-7. He has as many regular season losses at Ohio State as he has wins over Michigan. His worst season ever, they were 11-2. He's got a national championship. What he did at Ohio State is unimpeachable. He's been spectacular. But I know from a human perspective how much this means to you, how much it means to his family and the people close to him.
Yeah, and I think it was very important that he was able to finish up with this class of seniors. This class of seniors, very, very special. Some of them 4-0 against Michigan. Other of them 5-0 against Michigan. I think they won collectively 49 games as a group that recruited. So, yes, he's done great, great things. And one of the things he did tell me when he was kind of letting me in a little bit on what was going to happen. He said it's 7-0 against Michigan got a little ring to it. You know, 7-0, like, don't know if I'm going to be able to do much better than that. So that right there, we were able to have a smile on it. He's relieved. He's relieved also that he was involved in getting Ryan Day that head coaching job because he believes he's very, very special. And he believes, because he told me last year he was going to coach another 4 years. He believed they were going to be in the national championship, maybe two of the four, and believed he could potentially win two of the next four national championships. So Ohio State is stacked. If they can get Haskins to come back for his senior year, or junior year, he's a redshirt sophomore. If they can get him to come back with Ryan Day, special things in Columbus still ahead.
Well, we spent some time with Urban Meyer when we were out in Columbus, and he was a great guy and great to us. And we send our thoughts and prayers to both Urban and his family for
And congrats on an amazing run.
Yeah,
two championships
wonderful.
In Florida, time of off, go to Ohio State, win another championship, have an undefeated season. They don't even get to play for the championship. Like 85-9 overall. Like, it's unbelievable what he did at Ohio State.
We will have much more First Things First right after this. Back here on First Things First with Mark Schlereth. The Eagles hosting Washington. Eagles owned Washington last night, thanks in large part to their quarterback, Carson Wentz. Wentz threw for over 300 yards and two touchdowns. While it was more of the same for Washington, already injury-riddled, quarterback Colt McCoy left the game after breaking his leg. He was replaced by Mark Sanchez. McCoy is now done for the year. Philly wins 28-13. They're now 6-6. They got four games left. Here's Carson Wentz on last night's win.
I mean, it's big for us, especially where we were, not winning two straight and trying to kind of get some momentum going. Doing it against an NFC East opponent was huge, and now kind of setting ourselves up to make a run, you know, to try and do something special here. And I think we're leaving some plays out there, but we're finally starting to click a little bit and mesh together. And, you know, we're extremely excited for next week's opportunity for sure.
All right, what you saw from the Eagles last night, Stink, you think this team still has it in them? Are they capable of making a playoff run?
I don't believe that they are. I mean, I just look at the schedule they have left. They've got to go to Dallas, right? They have the Rams. They've got a game against Houston who's won, what, 9 straight games right now? I mean, the opponents, the level of the opponents and the way they have played, to me, the inconsistencies of the Eagles, I just don't think there's enough there right now to make a push with the opponents they have. Dallas is going to be telling. Now, Dallas, the one thing about Dallas, when you look at what they have been able to accomplish, one, defensively, they're tremendous. Mm-hmm. The linebacking core is tremendous. Their ability to rush the edge, tremendous. Something that the Philadelphia Eagles did a great job of last year. That's what Dallas is doing. But Dallas, more than anything, recognized what they were. They recognized who they are, what they were. They made a change on the offensive line, and they said, Zeke, you're going to be the guy that's going to take us to the promised land. We understand that we have got to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage. Forget about just running the ball. We're talking about thunder punching guys on the line of scrimmage, making sure we control that line of scrimmage to give our defense the opportunity to turn and do the same thing. Those are the games that they want to be involved in, and they have the personnel. It's no longer, hey, man, can Dak Prescott throw it for 328 yards, right, and can he throw four touchdowns, and can we set up the – no, we're going to just absolutely dominate the line of scrimmage, and that's how we're going to win. And they have embraced that. I know this about the Eagles. They don't embrace that. They want to be tricky. They want to go for it on every fourth down and two. They want to get you with the special. They want to do those things. That's their coach. Doug Peterson wants to do that. And I believe they're built more on the offensive side of the ball, more like Dallas than they would like to actually invest in.
That's what I was going to ask you, because I think one of the reasons they want to do those things is because this year they don't have an offensive line playing the way they had last year. They certainly don't have the talent in the backfield, running back-wise, that they had last year, and certainly not the talent Dallas has. And they do have a quarterback with a much better arm and much more talent than Dallas is. So I understand why Philly wouldn't want to run their offense the way Dallas does. Dallas is, to me, it's almost a product of necessity. We know what Dak Prescott is,
sure,
and what he isn't. We know that in their best game of the year, they won 13-10, like this game this past Thursday. So, and we also know they might have the most talented straight-line runner in all of football in Ezekiel Elliott. So, like, I get why the Cowboys run their team the way they do. I don't think Philly is built to run it in the same way. I also think Philly is what they've been through 12 games. They've been a 500 team at every checkpoint of the season. They were 500 through four games. They're 500 through eight games. We're now through 12 games. They are 500. Right. You mentioned the schedule. They have been a good home team and a very poor road team, and three of their last four are on the road. Like, so there's a lot of reasons to believe that they are not anything other than what the evidence shows, an average football team that won a championship last year.
Yeah, there are going to be some teams. We're going to talk about Tom Brady and the Patriots and what they do in the month of December. They identify who they are and trying to duplicate that. That's what you're talking about with Dallas. That right there is more predictable. That's something that I can be willing to bet on compared to Philadelphia. I don't believe they have an identity. But for Philadelphia fans, you have to be excited to be able to get Darren Sproles back into the lineup, to be able to see that Golden Tate can make some type of contribution this year, that draft pick that you traded for, to give you some more plays within your offense. Those things would have to be encouraged. But their inability to be able to run the football, it's going to hurt them. And their offensive line, to me, is not dominant. Even like Dallas, we said, oh, they're built a lot like Dallas, but they're not playing. The Dallas offensive line, you give them a lot of Tyron Smith, the left tackle, didn't play last week, has been hurt the last couple weeks. Their line play is still a little bit spotty. So I just believe that right now the Cowboys are far more predictable in trying to repeat what they do. Dak Prescott is completing more passes in the outside throwing lane, deep comebacks, than we've ever seen at any point in his career. So you know you got seven people in the box. You know you got to be able to throw the ball outside to Gallup and Amari Cooper. And we've seen them make enough plays for them to be able to get through. I think Dallas is going to be able to do that in the month of December. And I don't believe Philadelphia had the faith that they'll be able to duplicate that for four games.
So their run game and their offensive line would be the two areas you're most concerned about.
Well, that's where I would start.
Okay.
That's where on offense, on the biggest problem with the Eagles is something we haven't talked about this segment, which is the back end of their defense. The only starter left is Malcolm Jenkins, who is probably on closer to the back end of his career than the front end of his career. They have been ravaged by injuries defensively. And if we're being honest, last year, the biggest weakness, maybe the only legitimate weakness that team had, was its secondary. Teams just couldn't exploit it because their pass rush was so ferocious. Like, the biggest problem with Philadelphia, to me, as big picture-wise, has been that back end of the defense.
Right. How many special – and then the other thing is Carson Wentz coming off that knee injury. It's taken him a while. He played really well last night. Mm-hmm. But how many off-schedule special plays, special runs does he make? Because last year, every game – there was three or four of those specials that kept drives alive, that he scrambled for 14, 18 yards, put his body in harm's way, scored a touchdown. It's how he blew out his knee in the first place. And you haven't seen that, and understandably so. I mean, he's coming off a pretty significant injury. So that's another element of that offense that hasn't existed all season long.
One thing last year we saw, he missed most of the season, Jordan Hicks, the middle linebacker. We've seen this year when he's been out of the lineup, he's out of the lineup. That defense suffers in the middle. So, yes, we have players. We complain about their secondary not being that good. To me, I've watched every game. Malcolm Jenkins has had a good season playing with replacement-level players. They got a couple guys in their secondary should not be in the NFL. They should be playing somewhere else if they were still playing football. They are not NFL cornerbacks, so you're going to suffer. Jordan Hicks, you miss him out of the middle. Defensive line has not played the way they played last year. Down the stretch, subs on the back end. That is not a quality defense that the Eagles are putting out there.
All right. Just so I'm clear, so it's just the offensive line, the run game, the secondary, and the
defensive
line.
Well, we're talking about the Super Bowl team.
Right. Okay, and, I just want to make
and
sure.
And the schedule that they're
and
playing.
And the schedule play. Right. Okay. But just that, those seven things.
So we're telling you there's a chance.
So you're telling me there's a chance. Mark, we'll see you a little bit. Are you back here tomorrow?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Awesome. Good to have you. Coming up,
appreciate you.
Breaking news out of Columbus we want to pass along. Urban Meyer is reportedly stepping down after the Rose Bowl. Much more next on First Things First. All right, let's move on to college football now. The Heisman finalists were announced last night. Kyler Murray, Tua Tagovailoa, and Dwayne Haskins will all come to New York for the Heisman ceremony. Some online sports books now have Kyler Murray as the favorite to win the award. Nick, who would get your vote for the Heisman?
Kyler. It'd be very, very close, but Kyler. I thought he and Tua were neck and neck going into championship weekend with Dwayne Haskins third, but a close third, but a clear third. And obviously, during championship weekend, Kyler was outstanding. Tua was injured and effective and had to be taken out of the game. So to me, it would go Kyler, Tua, Haskins. But I think you make a strong case for any order.
Yeah, three of these guys have had sensational seasons, leading great institutions. And look at the total number. They've lost between the three of them. They've lost two games.
Yeah.
All right. So they're leading at the highest level, playing at the highest level. I believe Tua was ahead. Stink said it before. When you play against five top 10 defenses and you're not playing in the fourth quarter, that's why you see the margin as far as the stats. But Tua, to me, has been the most impressive.
All right. Finally, the Panthers made some changes to their defensive staff, firing multiple assistants. Carolina's lost four in a row. They're now 6-6 on the year. See, can the Panthers still make a playoff push?
It's going to be difficult. It's hard for me to, because this Carolina team, it's not like Carolina team that I've seen and studied. This defense, I think the second most points under Ron Rivera. Yep. When he first came there, we weren't studying him. He was just a new coach. Yep. And he'd just be taking over the Carolina Panthers. But since he's been there, I mean, he's made his mark in this league, and they've been great defensively. They've always been a physical team. They were going to run the football. Now, the offense has to play at a pace because their defense giving up 25 points in this.
More like, than 25
I mean, it's totally unheard of in a Ron Rivera coach team. So it's hard for me to believe they're going to be able to switch gears and now be an up-paced, offensive-driven team when they've been such a defensive-dominated-oriented team.
On the bright side for a team whose defense is struggling, half their games remaining are against the Saints. So that'll work out great for them. When we were talking about this earlier, Sting said they've been inconsistent. And that was the story on them last year. But on the other side of the ball, last year their offense was inconsistent because their quarterback was inconsistent. This year, through 11 games, Cam had been the most consistent thing on the team. Now, last week, that loss was not on the defense. Tampa actually has a pretty darn good offense. They held them to 24 points. Like, last week's loss was on Cam Newton. But prior to that, they had lost three in a row.
Sure.
The defense let what Pittsburgh score? 52? Yeah. Like they and so we have seen a team that right now is struggling for an identity, which is so odd for this Carolina team because their identity over the last decade has been excellent defense, particularly that front seven. And then their one special year, what was the difference? Yeah, Cam had a great year. But in addition to the front seven, they had great corner play. Josh Norman had an all-pro caliber season. Like, that was the year they went 15-1. And so I think these changes are justified. It's always unfortunate for anyone to lose their job or get a demotion. I also think you're seeing that when you consistently are so good defensively, your D coordinators get jobs, eventually that catches up to you. Mm-hmm. The D coordinator of the Panthers last year is a head coach now in mm-hmm. Arizona, Steve Wilks.
Yes.
The D coordinator 2 years ago.
Sean McDermott.
He's a head coach now in Buffalo. Like, you're not going, just like you worry, How much of these great offensive minds do we really have?
Absolutely.
When everyone's
well
like,
is only so deep.
Right. I'm going to get Sean McVay. You're going to get Sean McVay. I'm going to get his cousin. Yeah. You're going to get his brother. Like, and so that applies to both sides of the ball, right?
Sure.
Like, eventually,
yeah.
Carolina, we saw a similar thing, by the way, in Baltimore, where Baltimore, if you were Ray Lewis's D coordinator, you became a head coach. That was like a quick path to it. We saw a similar thing in New England. If you're Tom Brady's offensive coordinator, you become a head coach. Eventually, the Ravens ran out of those brilliant defensive coordinators, had some turnover, and the Patriots had to go back to one of the other ones in Josh McDaniels.
Retread.
And so, like, the Panthers, they don't have one guy like Ray Lewis. You're like, oh, he's – but it's been that Ron Rivera system. That hasn't been who they've been this year. That's how you go from 6-2 to 6-6.
All right, you mentioned the Patriots. Let's talk some New England now. The script with this team pretty much writes itself, right? Shaky September, questionable November, solid December, and here we are. New England sits at 9-3 currently with the 2 seed in the AFC. If it holds, they'll have a playoff bye for the 9th straight season. Was there any doubt? Tom Brady said the Pats are right on schedule with 4 games to go.
I think by December, you kind of know what kind of team you are, what kind of team you need to be. Kind of the die's been cast. I mean, it's not like a small sample size at that point. And, you know, our defense, the way they played yesterday, I mean, it's going to be tough for anyone to come to Foxborough and win when the defense is playing as well as they played yesterday. They really locked in. I could see it all week. They had a lot of different confusing looks for the offense, and, you know, they played their butts off. This is the time of year where we got to really keep the foot on the gas pedal, be at our best, you know, see if we can keep stringing these wins together.
All right, CC, with 4 games left in the regular season, what's going to be the key for them to get this right and then return to the Super Bowl with this Patriots team?
Tom Brady makes a great point there. And to me, I'm always intrigued to hear guys and sometimes what they do when they're practicing. So Tom Brady just let us know, big game against the Minnesota Vikings. I'm watching practice, not when he's on the field, when the defense is on the field, first team defense, I'm watching. He's watching the game plan of what they're trying to do to Minnesota defensively. He noticed that they had a number of exotic looks, even in practice. He's also noticed from a number standpoint what him and Belichick have collectively been able to do together. Like, I love covering this league. And when you've been, the only way to really get perspective on New England is to be able to cover them for a long time. Because we've been asking these same questions 15 years, 10 years, 5 years ago, still the same question. And how do they get it done? Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, but what's really underrated with New England? Defensively. Since 2000, in year 2000, what were you doing, Jenna?
2000, I was working in Philadelphia as a sportscaster.
Okay. Nick, what were you doing in 2000?
I was a freshman in high school.
Okay. No. Well, let me tell you what New England.
It's only my second job, okay?
Right. Still, some days I wake up in 2018, I still feel like I got a freshman in high school. But let me get to my numbers. Since 2000, Bill Belichick, what they have done in the month of December, the best in the NFL over that long period of time, 16 points, that's what the defense is going to give you. So you ask Tom Brady, hey, Tom, terrific. Greatest quarterback ever. This is all I need you to do.
2 touchdowns and a field goal.
2 touchdowns. And there ain't no guarantee that the defense don't score you one of those.
Right.
Or at least get you in position.
Well, this is the remarkable thing about Tom Brady's record and the Patriots' record in December.
That I'm on TV with a ninth grader?
Okay, well, it's not the year 2000. We're 18 years down the road. They're 59-11 and 33-4 at home. So that's crazy, right? But the craziest part is, it's not because Brady gets better in December.
No.
December's Brady's worst month. Completion percentage, December, worst month of his career. Passer rating, touchdown interception rate, all the stats, Brady is at his worst in December. Why? There's a lot of reasons you can say it. It's colder, the weather, the games are, the teams have more film, whatever the reason is, that's what the numbers are. But the team's at their best, because that is when, it's not like Brady's worst month is a bad month. He's still very good. He's still playing at a very high level.
Right.
And now the defense, all of a sudden, some years the defense is as great all year long, but there's no year that the defense isn't at least above average, at a minimum, by December. It was last year that we thought the Patriots' defense was disastrous.
Abysmal.
Oh, they really were.
Right?
Big plays, but they tightened up in the red zone.
And by the end of the year, they had it figured out. It was a couple years ago, right, that they trade away Jamie Collins? And we're like, the hell are they doing? Like, he was, the defense had been bad and you trade away. No, he had been freelancing, whatever it was. By the end of the year, they had it together. Like, that has been the key for New England in this run, is that we know what we're getting out of Brady, even if at the end of the year he trails off a bit. But the defense always goes like this. And Brady's right. Like, that's what the story of the Vikings game was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that they scored 24 on a good defense. It's that the Vikings had one elongated drive the entire game.
Yeah, that's one thing. In Urban Meyer, we had Urban in one of the segments talking about his retirement. One of his mentors is Bill Belichick. And one thing that Urban talks about, New England, you know what? They played a game of football downhill. He talks about it all the time. On the short field, going to win the turnover margin, going to win the penalties. They're going to win that. He said, bad football teams, they play on a field like this. So in New England, how can you balance that out? You know they're going to be good in the red zone. Even though you have the stats about Tom Brady, you know they're not going to beat themselves.
Right.
So how do you tilt the field so that potentially that you can play a game a lot like them? Because and that's a huge asset to have, and they have all these years of experience and a belief that in December, this is how we're going to do it.
And here we are. Coming up, how big is the gap between the Warriors and the Lakers? We switch gears. We talk some basketball. Richard Jefferson
all is right.
here to break it down.
Oh, yeah.
Comes first. First, look who's here. NBA champ Richard Jefferson joins the show. Richard, it's great to see you.
Earlier in the show, I was saying we get lists of names.
Yeah.
And they ask C, cross off a name if you don't want them.
Rich, I ain't real good. I ain't real inviting.
Chris doesn't really.
I mean, I do believe in grooming young talent.
Please.
But you have to say something before you get here to have me on the show.
Chris crosses off a lot of names.
No.
Your name was on a list however long back.
Yep.
And both of us, all three of us,
Thank you.
Ben actually knows RJ.
Yeah, RJ and I go way back.
Back when I was in high school and Jenna was on her fourth job.
Wow. That was not my fourth job. It's like my sixth
we're
job.
We're very excited to have you.
Honestly, this is one of my shows that I can actually watch in the morning. So thank you guys for having me here. I'm
Appreciate
excited.
You.
Well, good. We'll get some buckets. Play some D.
Let's dive in. We'll talk some Golden State Warriors, because why not? They finally beat a team handily last night, even though that team was the Atlanta Hawks, literally the second worst team in the entire league. Still goes down as a win, and they'll take it. In his second game back from injury, Steph Curry led the way with 30 points, while KD and Klay chipped in 55 between the two of them. But despite all the Warriors' success, Kobe Bryant chimed in. He thinks the Lakers will soon be kings of the West again. He said, quote, we'll be champions before you know it, and we'll be laughing in the faces of all those Warriors fans who came out of nowhere. All right, RJ, let's start with you. What would it take for LeBron and the Lakers to prove Kobe right, to be kings of the West?
Well, it's not so much how much the Lakers will move up, but it's how the Warriors will move down. Right? Like, that's really it. Because if the Warriors are at the top and they're playing well and they're healthy, there's no one. Until they decide that it's over, but the drama between KD and Draymond, you know, the injuries that they've been, you know, dealing with, free agency coming up in the next summer, that's what could affect the Warriors. I don't think the Lakers moving up is anything that's going to really even that playing field. I think it's more of the Warriors coming down.
You obviously know this better than just about anybody. The discussion surrounding Kevin Durant leaving did not start with the feud with Draymond. That was something the Warriors were privately worried about. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. Last year, during the season, they thought it was on the board that he could have left after 2 years in Golden State. They definitely thought it was on the board he could leave after three. And that is what the entire league is kind of waiting on. To your point, that if we get back to the regular NBA, where two superstars plus a nice supporting cast is championship caliber, that is all the Lakers need. Because I believe the Lakers are going to get another star player by this time next year. But one other star player, if the Warriors run it all back, that probably ain't enough. It's if Kevin Durant leaves, and then it's like, oh, Steph and Klay are there. KD and whomever are there. Boston's got what they've got. LeBron's got what. That's the situation where the Lakers are real championship contenders.
Well, and really, it's KD is the key to every. We've all known this. We've all watched and seen. KD is the key mainly because Draymond, Steph, and Klay won't be enough, right? That's not enough. Not enough to just kind of dominate the league the way they have been for the last 3 years. If you can get KD off this team and go someplace else, now, one thing that people have to understand is you still have a max salary spot. So they might be able to attract a different free agent. It could be Kawhi Leonard. It could be somebody else. It could be Anthony Davis. You don't know.
Wow. I've never even heard people talk about
talking about who doing
Golden State.
I'm saying Golden State. If KD leaves, they have the ability to bring in another max contract.
Not if they extend Draymond. Correct. They would have to.
Yeah, but if it's extend Draymond or bring in Anthony Davis or bring in somebody else, then it's like you start to talk about guys taking less money to like kind of keep this thing going, because one of the things that these guys have all enjoyed is the success, and I think they would all sacrifice to keep that success going.
Rich, I need your insight, because I need your insight on Draymond and KD, because, man, the one thing about you is you traveled around the league, and, man, when you got that championship, I watched that team. I watched what people said about you, and that level of respect that people have for you, not only your teammates, but the opposition. You're KD. You're an MVP. You're a finals MVP. Someone calls you out of your name like that. Rich, I know you. I knew when you was with the Nets. I know you, Rich. You ain't taking it that way. How do they survive these last 5 months? Because that was real. Mm-hmm. That was not created on TV. How do they move on?
Well, I think it's easy, because ultimately they know that there is an end to this. There's not a timeline that it's going to last 5 or 10 years. This is 1 year possibly. We need to make amends. And ultimately, I think KD has bigger goals set. He wants to win. If he can win his third championship and he has the same as LeBron, then it's kind of easier for him to walk someplace else. Bron winning that championship in Cleveland made it so much easier to go to L.A. So I think some of the things for them, they know that there's no one that can really compete with them if they're on a high level. So it's like, yo, let's put this aside. Let's go do our jobs, and then we'll go our separate ways amicably.
But it is just real quick. It is something KD's going to have to deal with all year. If people watched the Hawks game last night,
they're chanting that in the Hawks game.
They're chanting while KD's at the free throw line. Draymond hates you. Da, 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 da. That's the chant in the crowd yesterday. So he's going to have to. How many road games they got left? 28?
Yeah.
20, at least 28 times a year deal with that throughout the
regular
season.
It's pretty obvious. It seems like it's obvious that we're seeing the last in Golden State of KD. If he does leave, and as you said, the Warriors come back down to earth just a little bit, go back to where we started this conversation, Kobe seems to think that gap, you know, really gets much, much, much smaller. In the 4 years that the Lakers have LeBron, do you see them winning a title? Well, or would they absolutely need to add that second piece?
They 100% need to add that second piece, because as great as LeBron is, there's going to be a decline, right? And it's like right now, he's still averaging great numbers, and compliments to Luke Walton being able to keep his minutes down. He had 28 points in 31 minutes in a win. Now, that's impressive. And this was kind of a comeback win because they were down at the end of the first quarter. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the Lakers need to add more, because Bron's not dominating with high-flying dunks the way it used to be.
Right.
He's not bullying everyone. His numbers still look great.
Range shooting.
But and that's the growth. That's the work that he's put in. But they need another guy to take off that load a little
good.
Bit.
Good. Who's going to be that guy? You talked about potentially Kawhi. I happen to know information about Kawhi. Very familiar with Kawhi. Would you be shocked if Kawhi didn't pick L.A.? And if Kawhi does not pick L.A., who do you see LeBron teaming with?
Well, it has to come from a kind of a group of guys that it could only be 3 or 4 different guys that could possibly go to L.A. People have talked about Anthony Davis. They talked about Kawhi. Talked about Klay. But you don't know who wants to go there, right? And again, I don't know. No one truly knows. Mm-hmm. I would not be surprised if all of them said no. Look at Paul George, couldn't even get that meeting. Magic Johnson wants to tip his hat so much about, hey, we got LeBron and we're doing this. Hey, but let's also look at LeBron wanted to go to L.A. It didn't matter who was the GM. It kind of didn't matter who was the coach.
Yes.
Bron wanted to go to L.A. Paul George was the individual that you guys were like, hey, we're not going to give up any assets in the Indiana trade because we just think Paul George is going to come there.
And then they did the same thing with Kawhi.
Yeah.
They could have gotten Kawhi.
Yeah.
They didn't want to trade Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram or nothing.
That's kind of the story. Only I think I don't know how much Popovich.
You think
didn't want to go to L.A. All
right. So here, listen.
The Lakers.
You know this, C. You know this, Jenna. If you actually do watch the show, you're not just being nice. You know this, RJ. I've said if I'm New Orleans, I would not trade Anthony Davis under any circumstances. I would dare him to turn down $220 million. I would, because if you trade Anthony Davis, you're getting 20 cents on the dollar at best. So I wouldn't do that if I were New Orleans. With that said, I don't think they're going to listen to my advice. And that's the name that I think is going to team up with LeBron.
I think that it's not just because he signed with Rich Paul. Rich Paul's got a lot of clients.
Yeah.
He's a legitimate agent. People need to stop acting like Rich Paul only gets clients because guys want to make LeBron happy. He has established himself as an agent in this league. But the Anthony Davis one is the one that I think the Lakers have circled, because I do think Kawhi's going to L.A. But I think right now he's leaning towards the Clippers. And Kevin Durant, they have the money for him, but that would make no sense. The only reason, you like, do you disagree?
No, I agree with you. Like, I agree with you 100%.
Kevin, hey, don't get too much of that.
Agreeing with me?
Yeah. It's just on this topic. Okay.
I mean, if KD's going to leave Golden State, it's so he can win on his own. The only place he could go to where he wouldn't get credit would be the Lakers. So, like, that one doesn't make sense to me. And Klay seems as happy as can be. And so do you?
No, I agree. I agree with everything that you're saying. The one thing about Anthony Davis and having to trade him is we've seen it a lot of times. Guys have turned down that $220 million to go be where they wanted to be, right? And I think we're going to see it kind of happening a little bit more. It's like, hey, I can go there, sign a 1-1, let them get my bird rights, and then sign an extended deal. Because a guy like Anthony Davis is, what, 26 years old?
25.
25 years old? Like, so we're talking about, oh, this long-term. He can get two more of those contracts if he signed a two plus one, right? Like, he still has opportunity. Like, think about what Kevin Durant turned down to go to Golden State. So you start to see guys kind of turning down this money, knowing that they can get it in another way.
All right, Richard, stick around. Got to take a break coming up. Who's going to be the king of the East now that the King James is out West? That's next on First Things First. All right, let's move on to the Eastern Conference. Toronto is way out in front, 20-5, and according to Vegas, that's where they will stay. Vegas has the Raptors as the favorites to come out of the East. Behind them, my Boston Celtics, the Bucks, and the Sixers. Richard, which Eastern Conference team is best set up for this season and maybe even beyond?
Your Boston Celtics, I believe. Now, Toronto is...
You need to know the story.
Please,
I mean, you and her have history.
Yes.
Jenna Wolf, at a very, very young, impressionable age.
Yes.
Danny Ainge, number 44.
44.
Had a huge impact. She had the poster up in the room. So we're
huge.
Still getting Danny Ainge takes today based on that. So,
I understand he has 300 grandchildren.
I grew up in Phoenix. So watching Danny Ainge with Charles Barkley and all of those guys and coach that team. I remember when he played for the team.
Oh, God.
And coach the team with Jason Kidd. And so, look, I'm a Danny Ainge fan also.
Right.
For me.
She thinks he's handsome.
All right, Nick.
But go ahead.
Okay. Well, you know.
Gotcha.
That's for another time.
Yes. All right.
No, but I really think that Boston, hopefully they can figure this out. And I'm not saying that they're not in the Houston mode, but they're not even close to being able, or they're not even close to being the team that they should be. Toronto, but understand, Toronto, were they the number one seed last year?
They
were the number one seed. They've been a top four seed the last 3 years. Now, Kawhi's different. They have a different coach, and LeBron is gone. And LeBron is gone. But at the same point in time, I just don't know if they have enough talent to go seven-game series against Boston. I just don't know.
Here's my concern for Boston, and you tell me if this is too of an antiquated way to look at the league, that is, take Golden State out of it. How much confidence does having the best guy on the court give you?
A lot.
And in a playoff series in particular.
Yes.
All right, if they play Toronto, who's the best guy on the court?
Kawhi Leonard.
If they play Milwaukee, who's the best guy on the court?
Ooh, Kawhi.
No, I'm sorry, Boston plays. Boston.
Oh, Giannis.
Boston plays Giannis.
Giannis.
And if Philly plays Boston, who's the best guy on the court?
This is so complicated questions.
It's Embiid. No, it's whoever Boston plays.
You're talking about Boston. Okay, okay.
My point was my problem with
30 IQ points too high that we don't even need it. But go ahead, dog.
All right, my problem for Boston is in any of those series, they will not have the best guy on the court.
They might have 2 through 6 because Kyrie on any given night can be the best player in the NBA, not just the best player on that court. Jason Tatum, you've seen what he's capable of doing. Jaylen Brown, and then you have guys like Al Horford and Terry Rozier, and Gordon Hayward is starting to get into his own. You saw him coming off the bench having 35-9, and so I agree with you. But who's the second best player for Toronto?
Kyle Lowry.
Who's the third best player for Toronto?
Maybe, I don't know.
Just say, nah,
Anunoby,
nah, maybe, I don't know.
Pascal Siakam.
Because this is what I think. What's I saying? Kawhi is great, but he's not KD great. He's not LeBron James great, where it's like, no matter what you do, you saw when KD and him went head-to-head what happened, right? Like, KD was like, oh, no, you're very good. You're very, very good.
But he's better than anybody Boston's got. And I don't know that Brad Stevens, as great as Brad Stevens is, I don't know that he gets the most out of great players.
But can you say that Toronto can beat Boston if Kawhi Leonard has a 6-for-18 night?
No.
So you're telling me that Kawhi is going to have to play great for four or five games to do that in a series against Boston, where anybody on Boston can have an off night and one of the other guys can go and have 25.
That's one of the questions Nick and I have about Brad Stevens. We have a lot of confidence in him. We love what he does. Out of bounds, dead ball stuff. He's excellent.
Amazing.
Now, this is the best talent he's ever coached. Now, his brand is not the most talented. Yeah. Right, John Wooden, he made it, man. People talk about UCLA, but he coached great, great players. Coach K coaches great, great players. There's people like Bobby Knight and maybe Brad Stevens that they are best when the talent is not the elite talent. Mm-hmm. That's the question that we have, seeing, man, they are stacked and seeing them struggle, because last year we wondered, what are they going to do when they get these two other superstars back? Does that concern you?
It concerns me a little bit, just because you've seen his linear growth as a coach, and he's been getting better every single week. And Steve Kerr said, he's like, yo, this is the real NBA, when they were dealing with a little bit of drama and a little bit of adversity. Mm. So now here we have Boston, right? This was a team that everyone hands down was like, oh, Golden State might have it for one or two, but the next team is going to be Boston for 3 to 5 after that, with the amount of talent that they've accumulated. And so I just personally think that Brad Stevens and Boston need to figure this out, because I don't really like it right now, the way
their
playing.
Their offense is terrible.
Yeah, they're looking like they're still searching, but understandably.
Yeah, I got another question for you.
Please, I'm here.
Kyrie Irving. Nick and I watched Kyrie Irving. We've seen him play a couple times live. I'm a little concerned about his body. He doesn't necessarily look as big. He's never been a muscular guy, but he just looks a little bit smaller. And I just worry about the inconsistencies in his game. There's not a lot of players in the league who have the type of talent he has and are as inconsistent as we've seen with him. What are you seeing with Kyrie Irving?
Well, understand that Kyrie is entering into a new kind of job right now, where it's like, now all of this talent, he's still the point guard. I know he's in the Brad Stevens offense, which doesn't make him have to create for everyone, but he's still coming off of a knee injury, right? So he's coming off of something that he had that made him miss the last part of the season. So then all of a sudden during the summer, he builds up slowly. If you look at when we were able to win a championship in Cleveland, the first 25 games, Kyrie wasn't great because he was coming off the injury from the finals the year before. Yeah. He only averaged 19 points a game, which for him is low. The next year he averaged 25. But when you look at it, it took Kyrie almost the whole season to get to himself. So I don't worry about Kyrie. Do I worry about his health? Do I want him to be healthy? Yes. But give me Kyrie in game 83 and he'll be where he needs to be. Very similar to Gordon Hayward. You know, that was a little different type of injury, but it takes a while to get back to your elite self.
I like the fact that with all the teams sort of bunched up in the top of the East, you still feel like Boston will somehow figure it out. You know, the knock on them is that they have too much talent. They don't know how to all work together. But you keep saying, but they'll figure it out. What does that mean, they'll figure it out? I mean, how is Brad Stevens suddenly going to get these guys to have to take all that talent and work together somehow to get themselves up from where they are right now?
I'm a firm believer, if you have good people and you have good characters around you and you have a coach that believes in the individual. Now, we haven't really heard any drama. We haven't heard any drama in Boston.
Except for maybe a little from Terry Rozier.
Yeah, a little bit, but that's give me, and I like Terry Rozier a lot, but just give me a talented group of guys that are trying to figure it out. Kyrie was like, man, we need like a 15-year veteran around here to kind of make sure everyone's just relaxed. I just believe that Brad Stevens is a very good coach. They have very good talent, and very similar to the Golden State Warriors, when they're locked in and like, all right, guys, it don't matter how we get it done. We just need to go get it done. I think there's very few teams that know how to raise their level.
Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but here's where it does matter. Home court, we saw how much it mattered to Boston last year. They didn't lose a home game in the playoffs until LeBron baptized them in game 7 last year.
Yeah.
And they right now are looking up in the standings at all the teams we're talking about. We haven't even discussed Philly, who just added Jimmy Butler. Meanwhile, I understand Horford's a really good player. Joel Embiid, by this postseason, will have figured out what Horford's doing to him. We haven't talked about Milwaukee much, who, with respect to your teammate Jason Kidd, was a much better point guard than he was head coach and got Milwaukee got drastically better at the coaching position this year, and now all of a sudden they look defensively and offensively like the team they could have. I don't think Boston can beat any of the top teams in the East if they don't have home court. And right now, they are. It gets late pretty early if you're trying to get one of the top three seeds in the East. That's
I think Philly is the one X factor. I think Philly, if they're locked in and they're playing well with Jimmy Butler on your team and knocking down shots, I think they could be the sneak team.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.